Christian Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Voices whisper, ancient secrets, signs and symbols are abundant. UFOs, ETs, ghosts, and even the dead move about freely. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor.
And Trish McGregor.
And our tech magician producer, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com, where we make regular blog posts, and where you can find out about our books. Our most recent nonfiction book is The Shift, Reports from the Mystical Underground. Trisha's latest novel is White Crows. Rob's latest novel is Tulpas. Okay, Trish.
Okay, Carol Danny is a visionary teacher, psychotherapist, artist, and director of the Creative Earth Ensemble Project in Glasgow, Scotland. She has trained with well-known visionaries, including shamanic teachers Sandra Ingerman, Franco Santoro, and Stephen Mulhern, and psychologist Marshall Rosenberg. She runs a private practice in a systemic story therapy and is involved in projects centered on creating community and connecting people back to the land. She lives in Glasgow and is the author of Shamanic Dreaming and several other books, including Story Compass. In the book, she explores how to access your creative potential to shape and hold a strong vision for yourself and others. Carol Day shares hands-on tools and step-by-step shamanic practices to become more visionary and connected to the world around us. She details practices to expand the scene, set intentions, and connect deeply with intuition and spirit helpers. Welcome, Carol.
Welcome, Carol.
It's great to have you on.
Yes. Yeah. Built up some suspense. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So your book provides a detailed introduction to shamanism. And I'm wondering, is it possible to have a singular shamanic practice without a teacher, a guide, or a group? Can you do that? I mean, I always hear you need a teacher, you need a guide, you need to be involved in a group.
Right. Are you ready? There's a lot of different shoots off of that question, I think. And it's a brilliant question, really is. So the way that I practice is that I don't actually call what I practice shamanism. I call it innate ways. So okay. I've been through experiences that have opened me up to be able to connect with more than what we habitually are led to believe is there. Mm-hmm. And went through a deep healing crisis that meant that I had to find different tools and methods to find my way back. And the practice of shamanism and the words particular, in particular, shamanic initiation, mm-hmm. were the kind of, they were the light bulbs that helped me to put into context what was happening for me. So I call it innate practice because I also have worked a lot with young children, and they've been my greatest teachers, just watching how we naturally connect, and also through the birth of my own children and feeling how connected they were to everything when they came in. And so one of my passions has been to see how can we still stay that connected and engage with the world in a way that plays with the archetypes and that understands, really goes into that playful way. So yes, the first thing to say is for me, it's an innate practice. And for some people, we go very deep into it. And it becomes kind of a way of working that where we teach others. And for other people, it's about how do we live? And my belief is that we all used to live in this way where we were connected, where we experienced many realms, where we felt nature and the different members of nature was communicating and had ways to access that. So what I do in the book Shamanic Dreaming is I safely help people to find ways to restore a more holistic and animistic way of processing the world and engaging with the world. What I don't do is teach people to operate in a way that they're holding space for others. It's about the personal journey that helps people to open up to, communicating with the many realms, really.
Did when you mentioned when you went through a health crisis, did shamanism help to heal you?
Well, it was more that I knew what it was called. I really work from the place that the only teacher is our own initiations. Uh-huh. And what we're looking for is people who, we gravitate towards. Joseph Campbell talks about this, doesn't he, in The Hero's Journey, how the guide will appear. So we gravitate towards people that have had similar experiences and can hold empathy and kind of some idea of what that map is and how arduous it is, but it's everybody's personal journey. So in terms of did shamanism help me heal, finding out what it was called and putting it into a context and knowing that, I wasn't going mad, even though it felt I didn't find my context in the same way in everyday reality. That's what really helped. But some of the practices that I've learned since, I learned from my spirit guides and from, my creative matrix. Mm-hmm. So quite often what shamanism is known as, isn't it?
And it seems to me that people would not take this step forward unless they were ready to do it. I mean, that's something in them triggers that this is a path that they should follow. Because there's a lot of details that you have where you show ways of protecting yourself, and but when you go into like a vision quest, if you go into it heavily, into a nature setting on your own for for a time period, and working it very personally, you can get pretty deep, and you can come in contact with who knows what. In that, can you talk a little bit about vision quests? You mentioned those. Yeah.
I love how you're focusing on safety with this as well. Mm-hmm. The vision questing is visionary questing, I call it. Mm-hmm. Is what we do all the time when we're out in nature. I talk about the brain waves and how, when we're in our everyday self, it's a beta, faster wavelength. And then we come down to alpha, which is the wavelength of nature when we're in nature. And then we can go deeper to delta, theta, which is the visionary state that we dream from all the time. So what we're looking to do when we're going out into nature is go into that alpha wavelength, which automatically starts to happen. And that's why we can feel calmer, why we can start to kind of access deeper resources in ourselves and that knowing place. What I'm doing is just what we do all the time. And what I found out when I worked with the children in the Secret Garden Outdoor Nursery, 2 to 5 year olds, and spent time hanging out with them and seeing what they were accessing, really. I'm just helping people to start to be able to be with trees or be with land or be with different plants and be open to the communication that can happen. It's about being available. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, I don't see that as being something that's too challenging to the ego. The appearance of things can be sometimes, which I have had happen, and I've had to talk to my guides and say, this is a bit much for me, actually. I'm really scared. Can we have a different way of communicating? Okay. The practice that I'm opening people up to is something where we're just coming more into our everyday senses and expanding on that.
Where did you spend time with these kids? You mentioned where did you spend time with these children?
So my really good friend Kathy Bach, she set up an outdoor nursery in Lethem in Fife, which is still running today. And I co-designed the curriculum for it with her, and we called it Nature's Teacher. And it's all about, what happens in play when we just, we don't interrupt it, and we're out in nature, they were out there all 8 hours a day. It was about allowing, we were really convinced that if children could play in that way, in a safe way, and they were really held and not interrupted, then that was really healing for them.
Huh. And now this is your friend who you just went to see in Fife. that you mentioned?
No, my friend Kathy died. She died in 2017, unfortunately. So she might have been there, but no, I went back today, well remembered, Trish, to see the place where I used to work in Fife and the family that lived there.
So you live in Glasgow, and I've never been there, but I understand it to be somewhat of an industrial city. How close to the nature are you? Can you get out of the city into nature fairly quickly?
Yeah, I live right on the outskirts. I think there's one more street of houses before you hit graveyards and then hills.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm really close to Mary Hill as well, which is on the way into the city. So I carefully positioned myself so I could find some trees. But to be honest, nature's everywhere, isn't it? It's a bit more energetic, isn't it, when there's a hustle and bustle of human activity.
Right.
We have to work a bit harder to kind of ground and tune in sometimes.
You have an awful lot of material in your book about constellation therapy with astrology. How does that work? When you talk about working with people through constellation astrology to get to their issues, what do you look for in a chart to find their issues?
Okay. I do mention the constellation work, in shamanic dreaming, in the second part of it, don't I?
Right.
And the future ones, and we're looking at time as being a continuum. So I don't think I talk about the astrology part, but I do work with people with astrology and constellation. But my kind of, the whole message of shamanic dreaming and the way that I put things into context is that I call the first part calling. Everything has a calling. Everything has a true way of being. And one of the ways that I work is to understand, a shamanic way of being is to let us come back into rhythm with the rhythms of the earth and feel ourselves as belonging with that. So marking all the different festivals, working with the seasons, being a part of nature and feeling how nature is there, and also listening to who am I? Who is that tree? What is that mountain? Starting to open up to the communication system and seeing how we can bring back, and this is my belief, that the ancients are people that are still really connected in more of a harmonious unit together, are still in tune with everything and really listening and including the way of everything. So with the birth chart, I mean, I first studied astro shamanism. That was my way into first going to a teacher to kind of learn more about the shamanic way. And I was working with the totems of the different, that was Franco Santoro in Fintorn, with the totems of the different signs and planets. And really what I get from the chart is it's a signature. It's how everything was at the moment of my first breath and my arrival on this planet. So I find it really exciting and really effective working with people, just feeling these archetypal forces of how, for me, I'm Sun in Aries in the 11th house. So that calling in me is very much about being innovative and a pioneer for things, and also to be working very much with the collective and bringing in that kind of Aquarian way. And, straight away you start to get a feel of someone. And I do a lot of story work. I call it systemic story therapy. And it's a way to access people's stories, and then they'll start talking about things as well when we kind of, when we arrive at things, or they might start with a story and then I go, oh, have you seen this? You've got your north node, south node going here. What do you think about this? And then things will open, and then we might bring in things to listen to, different tensions. So, that's the way that I've explored the constellation work with the chart.
That's fascinating. I'm an astrologer too, so when I saw this, I thought, wow, what does she do here? Constellation therapy. That's neat.
So tell us about the Creative Earth Ensemble project. What is that about?
So I started off calling the practice that I was teaching creative shamanism. And then I went into working with the idea of the visionary when, I was woken up one morning, talk about this in the book as well, by my guide, who was telling me about the visionary being the one who takes care of the future life map. So I had this real sense that it was important that, this information was coming through, and it's not probably everybody knows this, you know, that we really take care of the future ones, and we have the visions that can create help to build a positive future, and that's what's talked about in the loop part. But the creative earth ensemble work kind of evolved because I was feeling like the Centre of Creative Vision, which was calling myself a couple of years ago, it didn't feel like it quite matched the ethos that I'm really particular about, the language and the matching of what it was I was holding. And then my daughter, she's studying acting in Manchester at the moment, and she was part of the youth ensemble, the Scottish Youth Ensemble. And I was like, oh, ensemble, that's such a good word.
It is a good word.
Isn't it? It's like we're all
doing really
something. And she was talking about the ethos of how the ensemble works, and it's very constellation kind of like as well. And then I don't know, I didn't want to let go of the word creative, and then Creative Earth Ensemble just came through, really. So
yeah, I like that.
All the practices that I hold are seeing, you know, that we're all part of something together. And that's why I don't like calling myself a teacher. I just, you know, I hold a space, I'm a facilitator for something, and I really listen. But I really feel like, you know, we're a collective together, and we come into place when we find one another in those resonant places.
You had some very interesting experiences with what you call fae, the fairies. Tell us about some of those.
Well,
like some of them are kind of mind blowing.
I can't remember which ones I've written about in the book, actually. What can I talk about with the fae? Yeah, I feel the fae as being like the transmission layers of nature, I love the idea of the Celtic fairy stories. So this kind of took me into it originally. And I was writing a course called Museum with a storyteller, Owen Pilgrim, who's very, very knowledgeable. And we kind of were looking at how to bring it, you know, bring the fae and fairy stories, get to the meaning of what fairy stories were, really. So it was an initiation and a listening. And I had a fairy tree, and I was really working with some of the Scottish myths, especially the one about Angus and Bride, which is in the book as well, and the connection to the land of the fairy there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to hold firewalks at Samhain and Beltane. And as you know, Beltane is the time of the fairy. And, you know, I'd work with them, going to different fairy groups as well, and kind of connecting with the fairy. So a lot of it has been very playful and just listening. But sometimes, you know, I think little things have happened where you're going, this shouldn't happen. You know, the magic that comes when you, but it's always respectful and just in a listening way, really. But I think, I don't know, I've just always known that they're there. They've always been there. So it's
that may be easier in a country as old as Scotland. But when you come to the United States, I think it's tougher in a place that's younger. Maybe that's just.
Yeah, maybe they're called different things there.
Right.
Well, that's a good point.
I've only been to Santa Fe when I did some studying with Sandra Ingerman there. But you know, there were is it sprites? The word that you word.
Yeah, sprite is. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the hidden folk. I could feel them. The stone people. I could feel them there as well.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Now, do you also see them? I mean, in your mind's eye, or do you actually see them physically, or what?
Yeah, no, I mean, the way that I perceive things is more like it's inside, you know, it's a plane that I perceive things on and communicate with them. Mm-hmm. I have had things appear, but I've asked them not to because I mean, just had to sleep with a light on. My ego cannot handle it. So, yeah.
So you had some connection with dragon energy too, haven't you? And through a fire ceremony, can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that was when I was doing some training at Lendrick Lodge in Scotland with Stephen Mulhern as a teacher, and it was a graduation ceremony where we had to go to the fire and just ask. So this was like 2008, I think. I've done lots of different courses with different people, and in this particular one, it was about asking, you know, what I'm going to do with this work. And the dragon just came through in the fire, and just talked about setting up a theatre, a dragon theatre, and working with the archetypes and the myths, and that actually we as humans could help change the myths and the something about two planes. I had no idea what this meant at all. And I think Stephen just went, ah, awesome. I just had no idea. So I did. I set up this theatre called Dragon Theatre and then sent out little emails to everybody that was on my mailing list, just inviting them. The dragons are inviting you, come along. And we did it really playfully, and people came with their families, with the children. You dress up, you had to bring a list of things. And they were at the different festivals, and we were at different sacred sites around Fife. And then eventually, a few years after I started this, I moved to a place called Wormit, and I think I told the story of this. I went into the local co-op, and I'd only just moved there, and I don't know how I got talking to this guy, and said, oh yeah, I've just moved here, I'm living in Wormit down the road. And he said, oh, that means the place of the dragon. And so I lived on the side of what I ended up calling Dragon Hill, and just going up and just, yeah, just tuning into the dragon. And the dragon dragon lines are the same as ley lines, as you'll know. So I was just, and then I worked with a friend called Katie Rutledge, who is a really brilliant shamanic teacher over in Northern Ireland. And we worked for a year with the dragon lines between, we just phoned one another up. This was before Zoom. Phoned one another up on a Sunday evening and just all journey together. And then another friend of ours called Susie Kuntz, who's now moved to East Germany, back to East Germany. But yeah, we did some healing work. She's still running that group like 15 years later.
Wow.
But it's clearing energy lines really, and just connecting to when I first met dragon. You know, they told me they were like, I don't know how you experienced dragon, but they were the keeper of all the archetypes, who were the first archetypal force that had come through. So yeah, dragons are great.
And it's interesting that
the series.
Yeah, the dragon was saying that the world of mythology needed to be reconnected with the humans, and that it needed some healing. That was an interesting approach that the dragon took for you, and you followed through on it.
Yeah, do you know, Robin, as well, that I think that changed me. Because it really, I mean, I'd seen this with the children, that they were channeling archetypal forces in the play, and just like really feeling like, you know, as adults, perhaps we're meant to keep on playing and, you know, work more consciously with that. So to get that guidance from the dragons about the mythological, I mean, I always teach that these archetypes, they come through us. And it's about learning, you know, which archetypal force do I have, and what is my craft? Yeah, so that's the mythology, isn't it? The mythology planes where they kind of apparently exist and reside, but we're interwoven. Yeah.
Now, have you ever walked the dragon ley line?
Yeah, I used to take my children on holiday every single year. We'd like get in the car and go for 5 weeks and visit different friends down in England. And we'd go along. There's a book called The Sun and the Serpent. Have you come across that book? I can't remember who the guys that wrote it, but they travelled the Mary and Michael lines along the bottom of England, from St. Michael's Mount to right across to Norfolk. So we used to take them to different places and to all these stone circles, and just Glastonbury. It goes through Glastonbury as well, and Avebury. So that was my education. But yeah, I find the dragon, you can feel energies, can't you? The more that you work with them and listen, you start to be able to just stop and go, oh, there's something here, there's a crossing here, or this is a sacred site. And then I work a lot with people and the practitioner groups with what I call land healing, but it's just allowing, you know, places on the earth's surface that have a special function to be seen and used and acknowledged in that way.
How old are your kids
now? 23 and 21.
So are they by your doing this as they were young, what do they do? Are they into the same thing?
Well, my daughter's an actor, and we were chatting today, actually. She completely sees that, you know, this way of contextualizing everything is the same as in acting, with the acting of the archetypes and shamanism. So she's really close to it. My son's an architect.
Different way of architect. Structuring.
Yeah, it's I don't. Yeah, I mean, your mum's just your mum.
So your book really is very heavy on mythology. You go into a lot of different mythological cultures in the past. And I wouldn't call it, you do it in a way that works into the story itself, what you're telling. It's not like you're giving a very heavy intellectual discussion about different myths, but playing into what particular thing you're teaching at the time or you're talking about. I thought that was well done.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a real believer that, you know, we all access the truths through, and that I think that's what I try and do and say, I'm not an expert on this. This is just what I'm getting. What are you getting? And here are some some ways to start exploring it, really.
Yeah. So what made you write this book?
It was the experience around visionary and my guide. Just, you know, when you walk, I don't often have these experiences where I'm woken up and I can actually hear the voices of my guides, but it was one of those big ones where it's like I could hear her speaking in the room. So I was able to listen carefully to that. And then I was, you know, I just keep asking, so how can I help this visionary in everyone? And it was the calling material and connecting with what the calling was in each of us. And I've been working with Circle for a long time and really exploring what Circle does, you know, and I love that gestalt idea that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And I just don't like standing out or being in charge of something. I always feel I'm a part of something. So it was, how can we explore this together? I call my workshops laboratories. You know, they'll be very safe and we'll go deep. And I'm trained as a psychotherapist counselor, and I've really, really been working with my own initiations. And I'm an artist, and I'm fascinated by creative energy. And I'll hold a safe space. But how can we all go into this together? So the book came out of just helping people to find out what that visionary was in them, and also to try and make the practice that I was working with at that time called creative shamanism be more kind of for these times. What were the times needing? And then the loop part came after I'd written the calling part, which is basically about helping people to go on a visionary quest, connect with nature and the different members of our earth community. And then the loop part was really the ancestors and the future ones, and working with the visionary idea of, let's really call to the future ones and find out, what do we need to do in these times? And then the constellation work that I do works so much with helping heal the ancestral and seeing that what we're doing and living now, it's stories, it's patterns, it's vibrations that continue, and that we can travel back through time and set up little theatres and bring things to listen to, things that weren't listened to, and hand things back and free ourselves to be working with whatever our own projects are. So the second part came around that. And so I feel like shamanic dreaming, the calling to do that was to help create something that could help people to see what a wholeness template was, really.
And you write about the visionary formula. What is the formula involved?
Yeah, I've been fascinated about, you know, what place do I need to be in? And what simple kind of messages what are the fundamentals of getting into a space of where I can be in tune and in alignment? So the visionary formula is a triangle with presence in the center. So when I'm present, then I start to be able to connect with everything. It's about a bit like getting into the alpha place I was talking about earlier with the wavelengths. And then the nature, if I'm in nature, then I go into that vibration of nature, but I'm finding my true nature as well. I think one of the things where we've kind of tipped off a bit is believing that we're not part of nature. Of course we're part of nature, and you know that needs to be a mindset. And then knowing, which is one of the translations of the word shaman, they who know, mm-hmm. they, she, or he who knows. So getting people to really listen to that knowing within, and then trust. And trust is the one about, you know, we will go through initiations, and I talk about initiations in the book as well. We'll go through these. It's natural, you know, that the cycle of the year takes us through an initiation all the time, and we go through life cycles. But when an initiation happens, I go into a new place, I evolve. And the trust is trusting in the process, really. And when we cultivate that trust, we come out of trying to keep everything so tight, and we can move back into feeling like we can open to everything again.
Do you? No. Hold on, I got a question.
Go ahead.
Okay, have you been to Finhorn?
Yeah, I lived there for two and a half years.
Wow. Now, what was that like, given all your work? That must have been fantastic.
Yeah, that was when I lived in Fife. My children were both born in Fife. And then I went through a huge life change. And I went to do a workshop up in Findhorn. I'd read a book called Women Mystics when I was in India. And there was a chapter on Eileen Caddy in it. And I was like, oh, she's in Scotland. You know, everybody else was all over the world in this book. I must meet her. I must go to this place. And then I used to go up there on holidays. And then, I just opened up the practitioner page one day and knew I had to do a certain training up there. And so I moved up there with my two children when me and their dad separated. We're still really good friends, but you know, that's where I needed to go to at that point of my life. So my children were in the Steiner Kindergarten there, and I was
that's
just
great.
Part of the wider community. And have you been there?
I love no, that. But I've always wanted to go. I mean, that's on my bucket list.
Yeah. And now Findhorn Press have, you know, Sabina, the publisher there, accepted Shamanic Dreaming to publish it. So yeah, it feels really special, actually, because I feel
that's
like Finton really, really, really helped me at the beginning of my my exploring more consciously.
I didn't realize Findhorn Press was part of Inner Traditions.
Yeah,
I opened up and said, "Wow, she got published by Findhorn." Yeah, that's great. Well, what did your kid? I mean, did your kids love Findhorn?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, we had a great time. Yeah. But in the end, you know, they were going to go into school full time, and I needed their dad to be closer by. So I had to come back to Fife, and that's when I set up the secret, you know, the curriculum for Secret Garden with Kathy, and then later the school that I ran. So, yeah.
Could you, Carol, could you talk a little bit about your guides? So when did they come to you? When did you make contact? Do they have personalities? Are they like ancestors or
who are they? About, yeah.
No, it's top secret. My guides. It first began when my grandmother died, and with the experience with the flowers on her coffin, when I kind of went into the flower realms, which is my connection with the Fae as well. So that was the first thing that happened. But obviously when these things happen, we don't know what's happening, do we?
Right.
It's in retrospect, and it's piecing it together. And then at different points in my life, you know, I'd feel things pulling me, or I'd start to see things, but I was really frightened. And that's why I ended up going to do I went on a week's course to study shamanism originally, because I was so frightened and knew that I needed to have a teacher there to kind of help me through it and to have that holding. And that was up in Findhorn. And then it was through journeying and just, you know, going into that vibration of the frequency of the lower wavelengths of the brain, and just really training myself to meet these guides and see who was there. And then I met my spirit guide that once when I was little, and it was my grandfather that helped me to connect to her in my journey. But basically when I was little girl, like one day I woke up and there was a figure on the side of my bed, And she looked very like my mum, and but she was so, she was all twinkly. And I remember saying to my mum, "Mum, were you in my, were you in my bedroom earlier?" And she just said, "Oh no, Carol, that will have been your angel." But anyway, my spirit guide is the one that I saw on the side of my bed when I was little. So yes, I have a spirit guide. I have a painting of her in my, in my room.
Wow.
And yeah, and just journeying and asking questions: Who are you? How does all this work? And then, you know, I honestly feel like everything can be my guide in some way, because it's about having a relationship with your neighbours, like the trees. You know, some of the trees have really been amazing guides on the way. But when I'm working in a practice and journeying for people, or working with the constellation work and just tuning in, you know, what needs to come in there, here, there are certain ones that will turn up a lot. So snake is one of my main ones that that I work with a lot. And then the sun, priests and priestesses, work with a set of guides there as well.
Hear that. In the what? After the snake, the what?
The sun priestesses. And
the sun priestesses. Okay.
Yeah, and in some of the traditions, working with the sun goddess or god, and through different traditions through time. But it's through listening and practicing, isn't it? Because we've shut all these things out. In a lot of our cultures. So it's just having a way and saying, I really want to get to know you. I know you're there. I have these senses. And then you start to see that actually the signs have been there all the time. Mm-hmm. And the messages I always teach as well, you know, the messages come through more and more in the everyday world, and through little things that you see, and the synchronicities and the coincidences. Right. So we can have this way of connecting to our guides that's very much an internal going into a journey way, or having dreams where the guides will come through in dreams, like I was mentioning earlier. But actually it's all weaving all the time, and it's just, yeah, it's just practicing to get into that mindset. But there's nothing better than being absolutely desperate and on the edge of terror to push me or anybody else to kind of, you know, start to open up to that and ask questions.
Do you have any other totems besides the snake?
I work with lots of different ones come through. I think there's different situations that need different things. Vulture, she's in the book as well. Vulture Woman I quite often merge with Vulture Woman. I once had a firewalk, and Vulture Woman said, "You've got to be me at the firewalk." And I was like, "Are you joking?" So there's all these people, most of whom I'd never met before, two that had flown over from Germany, and there I appear in the room, like dressed as Vulture Woman, and she was like, "No, I'm not sitting. You can't sit on a chair. You've got to get a high stool." So I was like going through the house looking for a high stool, and she could be quite at that time. She could be quite unpredictable. It was like, I don't think you probably got Rod Hull and Emu in the 1970s in the States, but we had this guy Rod Hull, and we had this Emu who was always up to trouble. You know, he was like a ventriloquist with this crazy Emu. Sometimes she could be a bit like that, but over time she's just got more and more kind of gentle, and she's just so compassionate. So Vulture, that's another one of my main guides.
It's good to hear from you something positive about relationship with a snake, because last week we had someone on who is an animal communicator who stepped over a snake, and the snake really was
cottonmouth.
chased her, and she said, "Evil snake!" You know, she said, "This snake is no good."
Oh gosh!
And it was cursing her. She said, "So
that must have been scary."
Yeah, but so you talk about trees. Do you have any particular trees that you're communicate with, or any particular type of tree that's better than others?
I've got another book that's came out a couple of days ago called Trees Are Our Letters. This is a course that I wrote. I originally called it Tree Shaman as a course, and then I just love the title Trees Are Our Letters. But this is, it takes you through a journey with 10 trees and through the medicine. And then it's a I'm a writer and artist. So I like, you know, there's different ways of healing other than like working as a practitioner in a session with someone. You know, everything can be healing. And so in this way, it's a real collaboration with the trees and just helping us to just work creatively with their medicine, really.
Is that book on Amazon?
This book's on, it's published by Moon Books, and it's on Amazon as well. So yeah, the trees, you know, about the Oum, I think you say that differently in different places, but the kind of druidic alphabet, and the trees, like bay is birch, for example. So I always think, oh my goodness, I'm speaking as trees. That's why it's called Trees Are Our Letters. It's that thing about weaving again, isn't it? So yeah, I think birch is, mentioning birch is a big one for me. Okay. Also, hawthorn, you know, hawthorn was a special tree I had on Dragon Hill that I really connected to the Kaalach, through hawthorn as well. Any tree, really. You have redwoods over there as well, don't you? The sequoia. I've got sequoia as the final tree in there. We've only got a few in Scotland, but
Well, redwoods are California.
Yeah,
I don't think we have any in Florida.
Yeah, right.
Here we have a lot of palm trees.
Palm trees. Well, they're pretty cool too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And what's the one that we like that has all the roots and the
ficus.
Yeah, is it ficus?
No, that ficus is a form of it. I can't think. What is it?
Well, anyway, that beautiful, gorgeous tree.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they have arms that stretch straight out to the side. You would think they would break off, but they're so strong.
Wow.
Yeah.
They sound great.
So you write that there is life and consciousness in everything. So how do you respond to somebody who comes up and says to you, rocks don't have any consciousness? Or do you?
I don't know. I just say, oh, well, I know that's my little cat.
Oh, beautiful.
She might be back. She likes to join in conversations. I think she can.
Yeah.
She's like your voices. I don't usually get into any debates, Rob, at all. I just say, well, yeah, that's fine.
Well, you know, that's what Jung believed too. Jung believed there was consciousness and everything. He talked to rocks.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know there is. I'm not here to convince anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess another way of answering that question would be, again, if you spend a lot of time with rocks and stones, like I've got a cine film that my dad took loads of cine films. I'm so lucky. And I've got cine films of me at the age of 18 months carrying these rocks from, you know, on the beach, on the side of the river, and trying to pick up the biggest rock. And I don't think that fascination for rocks and that love for rocks has ever left me, because I'll be the one that comes back from my holidays and, you know, has to take things out of the rucksack because it's too heavy. These rocks. But I think you feel that, don't you, in the land that people live in, like if you live in the desert or if you live like here in Scotland, where it's much more lush and the different weather that we have as well. You can set, I don't know, I guess I'm just sensitive in that way, but I could probably like sense what kind of environment people have lived in and which parts of nature have been more around them if I really tuned in. I don't do that because that would be intrusive, but I think you can sense that, can't you? Well, I can. We're all in relationship, aren't we?
Everything's connected.
Yeah. So what is your favorite nature being?
Well, trees are very special to me. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm quite, you know, quite changeable. So a bit like the weather. So it would depend on the day as well. I love maybe the weather spirits, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you start each day with a ritual?
Yeah.
Of any,
Yeah. Do you do that?
Well, I used to. I don't anymore. I probably should. I should do it again.
Well, I guess cleaning the teeth can be a ritual.
Yeah, I guess it could be. Should be a little bit more mystical than that, though.
Do you know when
I think a lot of us call it coffee. But
yeah, coffee, maybe.
Oh, coffee. That's coffee as well. Oh, gosh. Thank goodness for coffee.
Really.
I love coffee. It's so grounding. I find it really helpful. The ritual part. I used to live in Dollar, and I used to have a little stream, a burn at the side of the house. So every day I used to do yoga and then go and stand in the stream and connect with the rivers everywhere. And at that time I was working a lot with the rivers and doing river projects. Here in Glasgow, I can see the hills. So, you know, I'll rattle and I'll connect with my different guides, and then I'll connect to the, I've got a dragon rattle as well, connect to the dragon lines. And just it's about acknowledging, isn't it? And there's a passage in shamanic dreaming as well about, I think I call it an earth whisper space opening exercise. So if I begin by acknowledging that I'm a part of all this and it's communicating with me all the time, then it's that obvious thing, isn't it? That energy flows where attention goes. Mm-hmm. We'll start to feel that coming through as well.
Now, you've got several courses that you teach. Explain, do you do this through Zoom or are these in person?
At the moment, I do. Yeah, when COVID happened, I worked online, obviously, like everybody did. So all my courses went online, and I finished a couple of the practitioner trainings in person and, you know, kept some of the practitioner elements to be in person. And then I've been doing a film degree for the past 2 years as well, because I'm really looking to kind of just work with story and mythology and also make some documentaries. And so I'm in my last two terms of that now. So at the moment, it really works for me to do things on Zoom, because that takes up such a lot of time, and with the travel and everything. At the moment I've been working online, and
there a COVID spirit? Was there a COVID spirit?
Yeah.
Well, okay. And what did it have to say for itself?
We actually held some constellation classes when call them bringing in the mythical. I think we did like 12 classes altogether, and we just worked with listening to what the healing of the times would be. And I also worked with a Reiki group that I set up with some other people, who I actually went to meet today, because it was two of them's birthday today and tomorrow, Maggie and Carol. There were many stories about it, but we just asked to just bring in the light and the healing and the unraveling where it was needed.
Well, what do you think the bigger purpose was of COVID? Or was there a bigger purpose?
I think we're still working. Well, I don't know. I prefer to work as a circle and work things out together. That's always my way. But I think it's still working out. That's my sense. Mm-hmm. It's still working out. And, I mean, you have to be really, really sensitive around this, don't you? Because there's many truths, and there's many, there's many different experiences of what it's brought for everyone. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
maybe honoring, deeper honoring of multiplicity of ways. That could be one of the things that I see.
Yeah. So if you could choose one idea for people to practice from your book, Shamanic Dreaming, what would that be?
I just asked, and I just got self-love. Just, you know, being kind to the self. Bringing appreciation to the self, and wonder for the self, really, and getting to know the self. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I get to know myself and start to just be kinder to myself, then that vibration is going to spread to everything, and put that message across to Kindness, like, and self-kindness especially, because don't we as humans kind of just there's all these thoughts that we can have, aren't there? So that would be my message.
So I have one more question for you. What makes you happy?
It depends what day it is, Rob. I think this is making me happy. Yeah. Just connection and just being in environments where there's really a care for things, and there's laughter and but being deeply effective. I mean, I always say to people that I'm working with, be careful what you put, look at what you put out for. Really think about that. And I was put out, I give the example of what I put out for, and it's to put me where I'll be happiest and most deeply effective. And I feel like then it's...
Nice.
Does Dragon help you do that?
I reckon so. Yeah.
So where are your books available? How can people connect with your books?
Well, if you're interested in shamanic dreaming, Inner Traditions kindly organized connecting with you guys, who and Fintan Press are a part of connected to Inner Traditions, then you can go on the website for Inner Traditions, and there's lots of different ways of accessing them. Simon and Schuster are the distributors, and then obviously through Amazon for people that use Amazon. And then Trees Are Our Letters is through Moonbooks, and again it's go on Moonbooks website, Trees Are Our Letters, and also that's available on Amazon for people that use Amazon.
You have a couple other books too, don't you?
Tell
us those.
I've got one called Story Compass, which is also...
Okay, that's what I saw, Story Compass.
Yeah, which is also through Moonbooks. And this is an adventure working with story and very much with the constellation work as well. And then I've got two that I self-published years ago called Wheel and Little Red Drum, The Little Red Book of Shamanism. I used to be called The Little Red Drum at the beginning of when I started practicing. And then another one called Drum, which is about working with trees in the cycle.
Are you working on anything now?
Well, I've got five that are there, and I'm just waiting to see if they need to go out. And I'm writing, I've got two novels as well, and then obviously the films that I'm writing. So
you're a busy lady.
I just have too many ideas sometimes.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Tell us where people can see your website and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so my website, creativeearthensemble.com, that's the name of my website. And there's a page on there for contact. So if anybody wants to write to me, then I'll write back. So that's www.creativeearthensemble.com. And then I've got Carol Day Author as my Facebook page, and I've got an Instagram account as well, which I need to start using properly.
I just went out and followed you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, Carol, this has been great. I can't wait to go to Finhorn, Rob. That's my next trip.
That'd be good. Thank you.
Thanks
very
so much, Carol. This was great. And I'll text you when the episode goes up, John. Oh, he may not be on.
Oh, I'm here. I got to 1:13. Central time. But this should be next week, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, great.
All right.
It'd be a week from today. A week from today.
Thanks for joining the Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.